Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 90 for the week of December 7th, 2020. Before we start, a reminder that you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. You can also download a PowerPoint presentation that includes images of those same charts you can use in your own presentations. Okay, so when I decided we would skip the podcast during the week following Thanksgiving, I did that mainly because I knew the spot market data would be basically meaningless the week of Thanksgiving. And it was, of course. But I also thought there wasn't much economic data released that week, and it turns out I was wrong about that. I should have looked at the calendar more closely. Anyway, the upshot is we have lots of ground to cover this week, so I'll condense as much as possible and keep this moving. Let's start with a quick review of the spot market for the week ended December 4th, which was week 48 of the year. We're not going to spend as much time with this as usual because the week-over-week increases in week 48 are not a whole lot more meaningful than the week-over-week declines in week 47 were. Also, the year-over-year load volume data is really skewed because Thanksgiving fell in week 48 last year. So, we have an extraordinarily strong spot market, and we're comparing it to a 2019 week that was a holiday-shortened week. The result is an almost comically large year-over-year increase in spot volume in pretty much all the segments. For example, total load volume was about 233% higher than in week 48 last year. Dry van was in a similar range, and flatbed was up an almost incomprehensible 384% above the same 2019 week. Again, the point is that week 48 on its own doesn't mean much. But I do want to highlight a few things, and you can view all of the usual graphs, of course, if you download the presentation. Spot loads in the truckstop.com system jumped by two-thirds over Thanksgiving week, and that's a pretty typical increase for the week following Thanksgiving. However, it is notable that total volume recovered to the second highest level of the year. The highest level of the year was in week 39, which also happens to be the week that saw the strongest load volume ever. The big question now is whether week 48's strength is mostly due to shipments that didn't get moved during Thanksgiving piled on top of the current strong base that we're seeing, or whether we're going to continue to see volumes this strong going forward. And we can't answer that question until, well, I guess next week. One of the reasons that total spot volume was so strong is that dry van set a record in week 48, surpassing the prior record in week 39 by about 1%. Dry van was up about 55% week over week, and flatbed almost doubled. Refrigerated was up only 22% from week 47 and was only 77% higher than the same 2019 week. Yeah, that's how extreme things are, is that a 22% increase week over week and a 77% increase year over year is considered to be weak. Okay, let's talk about petroleum and fuel briefly. We can basically summarize both by pointing out that they are rising. The price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude late last week closed above $46 a barrel for the first time since early March, although it is still $15 to $20 below where it was when the COVID crisis hit in China, starting a global decline in crude demand and a decline in prices back in January. Meanwhile, diesel prices have risen more than 15 cents in the past 5 weeks. The latest increase was 2.4 cents during the week ended December 7th for a national average price of $2.526. As we have discussed before, higher crude prices might be part of the issue, but diesel started rising before crude really did. It looks like a bigger issue is the inventory of ultra-low sulfur distillate, which has been falling for nearly 3 months. That could be changing soon, though, as production bottomed out in late October. Okay, let's start the discussion of monthly indicators with what has to be the most interesting data over the past couple of weeks. The Bureau of Labor Statistics jobs report for November released on Friday showed a marked slowdown in the recovery in U.S. payroll employment. The U.S. economy in November added 245,000 payroll jobs seasonally adjusted, which is by far the smallest monthly gain since the contraction. Payroll employment remains 9.8 million jobs, or 6.4%, below the February level. Although overall job growth was far weaker than it has been since April, all the top-level private sector groups were at least slightly higher. The only top-level sector with a loss of jobs was government, and that was down due to a further winding down of jobs related to the 2020 census. Meanwhile, the number of unemployed people continued to decline, falling to just under 11 million. That's roughly double the number of unemployed people in February, immediately before the pandemic, however. The unemployment rate eased slightly to 6.7% from 6.9% in October. However, one of the big issues in unemployment and the actual improvement in the unemployment rate is the labor participation rate. The rate jumped sharply after the April, or the rate fell sharply, I'm sorry, after the April contraction, or during the April contraction, and then jumped sharply. But it has basically stalled since July at nearly 2 full percentage points below the February level. That's 2% of the entire U.S. population over 16, at least those who aren't in prison, who have simply dropped out of the labor market. Now, we might see incremental improvement in the labor participation rate, but we probably won't see a sustained recovery until a COVID-19 vaccine is widely available. And even then, we might not get back to the February participation rate for years, as many of those people probably have retired. In fact, we were already staring down a lower labor participation rate due to the ongoing retirements of the baby boom generation, and the only thing that had really held that in check was a really strong economy. The pandemic, however, may have accelerated the inevitable. Okay, boomers. Let's get back to the discussion of payroll employment. As I noted, we added just 245,000 payroll jobs, a level that would have been healthy 8 months ago, but which is disappointing when we're still about 10 million jobs below February. However, you certainly can't blame industries involved in transporting goods. Let's start with trucking, since this is the trucking market update. For hire, trucking added a very strong 12,700 payroll jobs, seasonally adjusted. How strong is that? It's the seventh largest increase on record, and it's the largest since April 2013. However, even with the addition of 43,800 payroll jobs over the past 7 months, seasonally adjusted payroll employment in trucking remains 52,900 jobs, or 3.5%, below the February level. As strong as the trucking numbers are, the really big story is couriers and messengers, or what we would call parcel and local delivery. That segment added an incredible 81,900 payroll jobs seasonally adjusted in November. That's the largest increase ever, aside from a return of UPS workers following a 1997 strike. And of course, that isn't a real increase in jobs. It's just sort of an accounting anomaly, I suppose. Since February, parcel and local delivery unemployment has soared by 181,800 jobs, seasonally adjusted, or 21.5%. Clearly, the holiday peak is one reason for higher employment, but that's actually already baked into the seasonal adjustments for the most part. In fact, the not seasonally adjusted increase for couriers and messengers is far, far larger. 189,300 payroll jobs, not seasonally adjusted. So if it's not just the holidays, then what is it? Well, as with everything else these days, it's the pandemic. People are more likely to have purchases delivered than to venture out in public. And at the same time, they are spending more of their money on goods because they cannot or don't want to take vacations, go to movies, sporting events, concerts, and so on. And we'll revisit this point toward the end of the podcast. The combination of more purchasing, but a lower share of that purchasing in physical stores has really supercharged e-commerce. So while we will probably see at least some decline in payroll and local delivery employment after the holidays, much of the growth of the past 8 months probably is permanent. Once a vaccine is widely available, we surely will see more people shopping in stores, but many people will choose to keep buying goods online. Let's not forget that e-commerce was surging even before the pandemic. So what we might really be seeing is an acceleration of what is going to be a permanent structural change in consumers' buying behavior. And to some degree, it becomes either a vicious circle or a virtuous circle, depending on where you stand. More e-commerce puts financial pressure on brick-and-mortar stores, many of which will either fail or reduce locations, and the result is that even more people will start using their smartphones or laptops to buy goods, thereby putting still more pressure on brick-and-mortar, and you can see the point. Of course, the picture really isn't so simple. That's because some of the major players in e-commerce also are major brick-and-mortar retailers, and they're using their physical retail outlets to distribute goods purchased online. Similarly, non-store retailers are forging relationships with store retailers to provide nodes for both deliveries and returns. Truly, this whole omnichannel approach remains a work in progress, and its effect on the distribution of goods and its effect on trucking is still really not settled. Okay, let's wrap up this employment discussion with a couple of notable pieces of trivia. First, the 81,900 new couriers and messengers jobs represents 33% of the net payroll jobs added in the U.S. economy in November. Second, if you combined that 81,900 jobs with the 12,700 trucking jobs, and we haven't talked about this, but there was another 36,800 payroll jobs added in warehousing and storage, you'll find that the sectors involved in goods transportation represented 53% of the net U.S. jobs added in November. That's just incredible. By the way, while we're talking about the labor market, I will note that we're continuing to see modest improvement in the number of people receiving unemployment benefits. We will talk a little bit more about that next week, and I will actually also touch on unemployment benefits briefly later in the podcast. Okay, let's talk about manufacturing. First, the Institute for Supply Management Manufacturing Index in November eased slightly to 57.5. But that reading still indicates robust growth, and new orders in production, which are the components most closely tied to freight transportation, were especially strong. The principal weakness in the index continues to be related to inventories, and actually to the degree that creates pressure for replenishment, that's arguably a positive for freight transportation, even if it is not a positive for ISM's members, who are mostly purchasing managers for companies. Another forward-looking indicator for manufacturing is orders for durable manufactured goods, which rose 1.3% in October. Total orders have yet to recover to February levels, falling 2.2% short in October. However, durable goods orders, excluding transportation equipment, which also increased 1.3% month over month, were 3.9% higher in October than in February. And orders for core capital goods, that's non-defense capital goods excluding aircraft, which is an indication of business development, were up 0.7% in October and were 3.9% higher than in February. Okay, let's talk about the housing market. Last week, Freddie Mac reported that the rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage dipped to its 13th all-time low this year, 2.71%. Rates are now about a half a percentage point below the all-time low prior to the pandemic. We talked recently about sales of existing homes, which were up more than 4% in October. Sales of new single-family homes in October were not as strong, and in fact were down very slightly, 0.3%. Despite this pause, though, new home sales were nearly 40% higher in October than they were in February. Another key sector, international trade in goods, continues to recover. Goods exports in October slightly outpaced imports at 2.8% growth compared to 2.2%. However, imports in October were 4.9% higher than they were in February, seasonally adjusted, but exports were still 8.5% lower. All major categories of goods exports rose in October versus September, except for foods, feeds, and beverages, which were down 4.4%. That's potentially a sign that the recent surge in agricultural imports to China is starting to fade a bit. However, exports in that category are still more than 11% higher than they were in February. All other exports were lower than they were in February, except for a small increase in consumer goods exports. Most goods imports were stronger in October. Compared to February, consumer goods led the way at more than 12% higher. Other categories were more than 5% higher than in February, except for industrial supplies, which were down about 7%, and other goods, which were down more than 10%. Finally, let's tie up a couple of loose ends from earlier in the podcast. First, I had mentioned that Americans are substituting goods for services in their spending. Then, a few minutes later, I mentioned that we wouldn't be delving into unemployment benefits data as we usually do, but that I would have something to say about it at the end of the podcast. So, those loose ends bring us to the final topic for the week, which is data on personal income and spending from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Let's start with spending. That was up 0.5% in October, which is the smallest increase since the severe contraction in April. Spending on goods was flat month over month in October, while spending on services was up 0.7%. What I mainly wanted to talk about, though, is October versus February. Total in spending in October was 1.8% below February, seasonally adjusted, but spending on goods was 7.8% higher in October versus February, while spending on services was 5.8% lower. Now, personal income. It was down 0.7% in October, even though income from wages was higher month over month. So how could that happen? Remember the Lost Wages Assistance Program? That's the $300 a week supplement the Trump administration provided after the $600 a week federal supplement expired in July. Funding for the Lost Wages Assistance Program was limited to $44 billion, and the program essentially ran out of money in September. So what happened? Well, October came, and all the money that flowed in September wasn't there, and that is why we had a 0.7% reduction in personal income in October. Unless we get further legislation, January also will will show another drop in income, probably, as millions of Americans stand to lose unemployment benefits from federally funded programs at the end of this month. Perhaps we'll have some good news next week, though, as Congress is under the gun to extend funding for the federal government by the end of this week, and legislation to do that might also include an extension of unemployment benefits. However, it's also possible that funding for the federal government will lapse. Stay tuned. So that's it for this week's podcast. Let's recap. Spot volumes rebounded following the Thanksgiving holiday. Diesel and crude prices continued to move higher. U.S. job growth was just 245,000 payroll jobs in November. For hire, trucking added 12,700 payroll jobs. Parcel and local delivery added 81,900 payroll jobs. ISM manufacturing index eased but is still robust. Orders for durable manufactured goods rose 1.3%. Mortgage rates fell to their 13th all-time low of the year. Sales of new homes stalled but remained very strong. Goods exports and imports rose more than 2%. And personal income fell, but spending was up slightly. One final note. With the release of goods, trades, data, and personal income and spending data last week, we now have a complete set of the October economic indicators we follow. The presentation accompanying this podcast includes two slides summarizing how that data compares to February and how it compares to September. You can download the presentation at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. So that's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 90 for the week of December 7th, 2020. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and railcar. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.